Hebrews 11 is the climax of the book. It is where everything goes down. He has been leading to this point. This is the most important part of the book of Hebrews. This is the Romans 8 of the book of Hebrews. Like, Romans 8 is another thing like that. If you're watching an action movie, this is the final shootout before the conclusion. This is everything that we've been getting to. And what this is all about is it's all about faith. So the book of Hebrews, what he's been talking about the entire time is he's been talking about the superiority of our relationship with God through faith. That we used to have a relationship with God that was through works, that was the old covenant, but now we have a relationship with God that is solely through faith. And he is now even going to go back to the Old Testament. What he's going to show is he's going to show that faith, our relationship with God based on faith, has actually been the way that everyone is related to God. That there's never been a person that is related to God by any way outside of faith. So he's going to explain what faith is, how you abide in it, and how it grows you as a Christian. And this is a very, very important chapter of the Bible. Because like we talked about before, we have a lot of misconceptions in our culture about what faith actually is. So we're going to be kind of dispelling some of those false ideas of what it is and getting down to the truth. Another poor thing, you notice how I said everything that they did in the Old Covenant was by faith, but it was also by works. And this is what I mean. All the works of the Old Testament, if you go in the Old Testament, it has all these works, all these rituals, all these sacrifices, all these things that you had to do. What they were doing is those things alone did not save them. And we'll talk about that. Those things did not save them. In fact, if you were a saint, if you were someone who believed in God before Jesus came and you died, you still wouldn't go to heaven. You still wouldn't be able to go to heaven. They went to a place that was called Abraham's bosom, and they awaited the sacrifice of Jesus to ascend into heaven. That's what happened to them. So these people, and he says this over and over again, that they had a faith for something that was going to happen. Our faith is for something that already happened. So we have a superior faith to them. And also because of that, their works, all their works were doing was their works were kind of building their faith and what God was eventually going to do. You read anything in the Old Testament, everything that's happening in the Old Testament is simply pointing to the eventual crucifixion of Jesus. That's why we don't do it anymore. All right, if you guys ever wondered, why don't we keep the Sabbath anymore? Because Jesus is our Sabbath. It says in this book, says in Colossians, all the Sabbath was it was one day a week where the people of God rested. And the writer of Hebrews has said, dude, Jesus is our rest. He is our Sabbath. We no longer have to do works. Why don't we keep kosher anymore? Well, the kosher laws were supposed to keep the people of Israel together as a unified nation. We don't need that anymore. We have the Holy Spirit that keeps us together. Why don't we do animal sacrifices? Because Jesus is our official sacrifice for all time. We don't need any more sacrifices ever because of what Jesus has done for us on the cross. We put our faith in that, and that is it. Right? Why don't we have a temple anymore? Well, because the temple was the dwelling place of God, but now our bodies are the dwelling place of God. Right? Everything that you see in the Old Testament, all it was doing is it was pointing to the eventual crucifixion salvation of Jesus. That was it. So all we do as Christians today is we look back to what he did. We don't have to do any of those rituals anymore. The only thing that remains in the Old Testament in this way, Jesus fulfilled the Old Testament, so in that way they all still remain. But the only thing that remains in the sense that we still do it would be the moral commandments. You guys understand that, right? So thou shalt not kill, still bad, right? You can't be like, no, I'm in the new covenant. I could kill people now. No. All those Old Testament moral commandments remain. Those are the only things that remain, though. All the other rituals, they're all done. They're all done away with. So let's talk about what faith is real quick. Verse 1. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. So right there, we get a definition of faith that is a little bit different than what we've probably been told by our culture. Once again, our culture believes that faith is something that can't be really quantified and something that we can't really understand. It is something you just choose to believe something, and that's what faith is. And we've talked about this before. If you believe in something devoid of evidence, that's not faith, that's assuming. Right? That's assuming something. That's not what the Bible defines as faith. And most of us understand we use faith every day of our lives, right? When I get up this morning, I got up and I brushed my teeth, right? I had to use faith that toothpaste is going to actually help my teeth and not kill me, right? Now that faith is built on something, right? What's it built on? the fact behind the toothpaste, right? I bought a box. It says Colgate. It says 4 out of 5 dentists approve it. I'm like, okay, you know, these guys probably know what they're talking about. I brushed my teeth with it. It hasn't killed me yet. I'm okay with it. Now, if I just went to the store and I'm like, huh, you know, this is a box of turpentine. I think this will clean my teeth because it really cleans my house really well. You know, I use it to clean off the varnish and stuff. And, man, I think it will clean my teeth, like, way better. And you guys would look at me and be like, dude, that's poisonous. I'd be like, I don't think so. You know, I mean, my wood seems to be doing pretty good with turpentine. And, you know, like, my car seems to be good. I mean, what's wrong with that? You'd be like, dude, no, this is for cleaning off paint. It'll kill you. Like, literally, it'll kill you. And now, if I ignore you guys, the reason why you guys have faith that it will kill me is not because you guys have yourselves drank it before and be like, no, it really kills you. Like, I tried it, you know, and I'm sure, dude, I'm dead. Like, I'm testament to the fact that it kills you. You do it because there's a warning on the back, right? And so you're basing your faith on, once again, experts have looked into this stuff and they've done it. Do you guys see what I mean, though? We don't actually know anything. We have faith for everything. We base everything that we do on an assumption of something that someone else has told us. And if you guys ever take philosophy, you'll learn this to be true. If you take philosophy, you'll learn that you actually can't know anything. You can't know that this event right now is actually happening. You might be having a dream. You know, you might be having a dream. This is all in your imagination. None of this is real, right? You could be having a dream. You might be a god in a totally different universe, and this is all just a fantasy, and you created this world. You don't know anything. You can't prove anything. When it comes down to it, you can't prove that I exist. You can't prove that you're breathing air. Maybe this is the Matrix. You know, you don't know anything. That's what philosophy teaches us. So because of that, because you can't know anything, we use faith to supplement our knowledge. Do you guys understand that? For the things that you can't know for a certainty, that is where faith comes in. It is the substance of things hoped for. It is the evidence of things you don't see yet. Right, that is what faith is. Everybody uses faith. Atheists, Hindus, Buddhists, Krishnas, Muslims, Mormons, we all use faith. You cannot exist on this plane of existence without using faith. The only person who can honestly say, I don't use faith ever, is the person who admits that they concede that they might be the only living thing on this planet. We actually, there's a whole group of people like this. You guys know what they're called? Sophists, actually. Monks believe in reality and stuff like that, but sophists, they honestly believe that everything that's happening in the universe is a figment of their imagination. They don't believe any of it. And they just go about and they... Solipsists. You can look it up on Google. They exist. They're out there. And they have jobs and stuff, and the obvious point you could point out to them is like, dude, if it's all made up, like, why get a job? They'd be like, well, you know, it's my universe. I might as well get a job. You know, they just like they do their thing, and they're weirdos. But that's what they believe. They're the only people that can honestly say we do not function on faith. We just do stuff, right? But for everybody else, we function on faith. We believe things because we have evidence for them. That's what we do. Christianity, your Christian walk is no different. You believe things because you have a foundation for them. If you don't, then you don't, again, you don't have faith. That's not, you can't call that faith. You assume it. You believe it because it's convenient for you or because you grew up in it. And every single human being, some point in their life, you're going to have to come up to a point where you are going to choose whether to actually put your faith in Jesus or just to continue to believe in him. Right? But there is a difference. If I'm raised in Christianity, there will come a point in my life where I have to choose whether or not to put my faith in Jesus. The same thing is true with everyone else, right? Everyone will have that moment where they have to put their faith in Jesus. You can't just go about your life in ignorance and just assume that Jesus is real. Hey, do you guys have any questions about that? Cool. So the cool thing about that is if you guys are ever doubting your faith, if you're ever like, I don't really know if God's real or something like that, that's an okay thing to say. In fact, it's a good thing that you do that. If you never question your belief systems, what that means is that you don't actually have faith, you just like to believe it. You guys understand that? And people do that all the time, right? In fact, atheists, as much as they would not like to believe it, they do it more than anyone I've ever met. Because here's the major downfall of atheism. I'm going to get into something that might be a little weird to you guys, and you might not understand it, but I'm going to say it anyway. Richard Dawkins, you know, and people like him, Sam Harris, people like that, these new atheists, they are biologists, they're scientists. And you know what science does? Science studies the universe as it is. But here they are, and these are scientists, and they're debating whether or not God exists. Now, God is an agent outside of the universe. That means that science could never prove or disprove whether or not there's a God. Do you guys understand that? It could never prove or disprove whether or not there's a God, because all you're doing is you're just explaining how things actually work in the universe. The easiest way I could explain this is I like comics, and there's a character in the comics that I really like named Deadpool. You guys heard of Deadpool? Now, the reason why Deadpool is cool is because he is the only character that is aware that he is a character. And so he's kind of funny because he's aware that he's a comic book character and he makes jokes like that. He's aware of the reality. Now, for Deadpool, right, Deadpool knows that there's a creator, right? He knows that Stanley, right, you guys know who Stanley is, right? He's the guy who wrote pretty much all of Marvel Comics. Deadpool is aware that Stanley is a person. But you could never find Stanley in Marvel Comics. Does that make sense? I could buy every Marvel comic book that has ever been printed. I could read every single one. I could understand his universe better than he does, and I will never find evidence for Stan Lee. Why? Because Stan Lee doesn't live in his comic. He wrote it. Does that make sense? So in one sense, every comic that I read is evidence for Stan Lee. But in another way, it's not. That's why Deadpool is a funny character. Because nobody believes him, right? He's always talking to the audience, and everyone's like, "Who are you talking to?" Right? And we're watching as the audience, we laugh, but no one else in the comic book is aware of what he's doing. They all think he's crazy. Why? Because he could never prove the existence of the comic book reality within the comic book reality. He could never do that. You have to go outside of it to see the truth. You guys understand that? In the same way, no scientist could ever disprove God. Because all they could do is explain what they see and feel and touch. And we believe God exists outside the universe. So if you ever, you know, go on YouTube or whatever and watch an atheist versus Christian debate, it's all useless. Whenever I watch it, I'm like, this is all kind of lame. Because here's the atheist, and he's a scientist. He's not a philosopher. And he's trying to debate a philosopher about philosophy, you know, and so he's like, of course he's going to lose. There's no bearing to his argument. Right now, if Richard Dawkins, who's a biologist, wanted to debate another biologist on whether or not biology points to the existence of God or not, I would love to listen to that debate. But he doesn't do that. He has purely metaphysical arguments with people who are metaphysicians, you know, like John Lennox and people like that. So it's dumb. Again, that was an aside, but I just wanted you guys to know that. They're trying to disprove something that you need to have faith to believe anyway. You need faith to believe in atheism. They don't want to believe that, but it's true. Why? Because they don't know that there's not a God. They just believe it. Now, they believe that there's evidence supporting what they believe, but so do we. So there's no difference. We all have faith. We just got to do what we do with it, with what the faith is. And here's another misunderstanding of faith. Another misunderstanding of faith is that having faith in something means that we don't do anything. And that's also stupid. Let's keep reading. Verse 3. By faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God, so that the things which are seen were not made of things which are visible. Now that's a really cool statement. What the writer of Hebrews is saying, and it's something that the philosophers of that day were speculating on, they were speculating on something called an atom. Right? They said that everything in this universe must be, if you were to break it down more and more and more, there must be the simplest piece of matter called an atom, and that is the building block for all of reality. That's what they would say, right? But again, that's a philosophical point. They couldn't prove it at that point. They couldn't see atoms, right? And guess what? We still can't see atoms. Atoms, and by the way, we not only do we believe in atoms, but we actually believe in what's called subatomic particles. We believe in particles even smaller than atoms. And we've never even observed an atom because it's too small. Do you guys get that? But the reason why we believe it is because it makes sense of reality. We know that it must exist. But we haven't seen it. We haven't observed it. there's a difference there. And he's saying that it requires faith to even function in reality. And this is the next point that I'm trying to make. Faith, true faith, has to have action as a part of it, or else it's not faith. For instance, if I told you guys, I believe, I have faith, that there's a bomb in this room right now, and it's going to go off in 20 minutes. Now, if I make no efforts to leave the building, my faith is dead. Because it didn't do anything for me, right? If my faith doesn't motivate me to leave the building or warn you guys, then my faith is completely useless. Or if I tell you guys, like, let's say I'm diagnosed with cancer, and I say, I believe, I have faith, that if I do this diet of only eating carrots for 6 months, it'll cure me. And you see me every day eating Big Macs. And you're like, Peter, I thought you said that if you eat carrots every day that you're going to be cured. I'll be like, yeah, I believe that. Well, what are you doing about it? Well, you know, I believe it. Doesn't mean I have to do anything. As stupid as that sounds to you guys, that's as dumb as a Christian who'd be like, dude, why don't you do good works? Well, I have faith in God. Doesn't that faith make you do anything? No. I just believe that he's real. Your faith is dead. It's stupid. It's not even existent. I would even doubt that you have faith. Do you really actually believe that there's a God out there? I don't know if you actually do. But even if you do, it's a completely useless faith because it's not causing any change in your actions. You guys understand that? That's why he's saying, by faith, I understand the worlds were framed by the word of God. I believe that God is holding the world together. I believe that this world has functionality. I believe that it has things that make sense. And that's how I live my life. I believe that. I wasn't there. I didn't see it. But I believe it. You guys understand that? And that is how I live my life. I live my life based on that foundational principle. Everything I choose to do is based on that foundational principle that God created the heavens and the earth. Everything I do. Right? Why do I love people? Why do I abstain from sexuality? Why do I abstain from alcohol? Why do I share my faith? Why do I do that? All of it is based on the reality that God has created this universe. It has meaning. It has purpose. It has intent. And I should live my life as a result of that. You guys get that? Everything we do as Christians is based on faith. Now, how does that look practically? Okay, let's go to verse 4. By faith, Abel offered to God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained witness that he was righteous, God testifying of his gifts, that though it be being dead, still speaks. This is what it's saying. Back in Genesis chapter 4, Adam and Eve, after they fell, they had sons, Cain and Abel. Cain had animals. He was a shepherd. Abel was a farmer. So Cain would be kind of like a hunter, and Abel was more like a gatherer, I guess, if you want to put it in those terms. And they would both offer sacrifices to God. Cain was the farmer, and Abel was the shepherd. So he had the animals. So Abel would offer up his meat sacrifices, and Cain would offer up his fruit sacrifices. And some Christians have been like, well, the reason why Cain was not accepted by God was because he was offering up fruit. God doesn't want fruit. He's not a vegetarian. He wants meat, you know. And that's just simply not true. If you go into the law, there are plenty of sacrifices in the law that are only grain offerings or some sort of a fruit or something like that. So that wasn't the reason why God didn't accept him. We get the reason right here. The reason why Abel was accepted and Cain wasn't was because Abel had faith. What does that mean? It means this. Cain, when he was offering things up to God, didn't trust God. He didn't believe that God really loved him and cared for him. So what he was trying to do is he was trying to earn favor with God through sacrifice. Do you guys understand that? He didn't believe that God loved him. Abel, on the other hand, believed wholeheartedly that God loves me and cares about me, and because he loves and cares about me, I am offering these things up to him. Do you guys see the difference? So as a Christian, if you do not believe that God loves you, if you do not believe that God cares for you, then your good deeds mean nothing. They're useless. They're going to be rejected by God just like Cain's was. The only way that your good deeds mean anything is if they're done out of faith. Right? So like I said, faith motivates me to act and it is the substance of why I act, and that is why I am approved of God. Now, another important thing that I just want to bring up real quick before we move on, and is why God chooses to operate this way. And you guys ever wonder that? Why does God choose to operate out of faith? Why doesn't God just come down, you know? Why doesn't he come down, crack the sky and be like, hey, you know what? This is what I want you to do. Do it. Right? Wouldn't that be easier? So we wouldn't operate on faith. We would operate on sight. That'd be easy. I used to think that way all the time as an atheist. And even as a young Christian, I used to think that way. But then I really stopped and thought about it. And here's the thing. Knowing that something exists and fearing it doesn't mean I love that thing. And here's what I mean. If God were to reveal himself to you, God who is so mighty that he could speak things into existence, have you guys even conceived of what it would be like to come into contact with a being like that? I'm terrified of his creation. Dude, if I came up against a bear, I would be terrified of that thing. You know, I can't deal with it, right? Coming in contact with God who created everything, right? It would be absolutely mind-blowingly terrifying to come in contact with him. Now, if I came in contact with God, you better believe I'd obey him, right? If God literally cracked the sky and he said, Peter, obey me, I'd be like, okay, I'll obey you. But why would I be obeying him? Out of fear. I'd be terrified of him. Dude, I don't want to die. You know, like, of course I'm going to obey him. It's the same reason why I obey the laws of Arizona. I don't love the court system. Right? I don't send love letters to the court system, but like, I love you and I'm so grateful that you're alive and that you keep me alive. I don't do that because I hate the court system. I obey it because I don't want a ticket. You know, that's really it. I don't want to get in trouble. If God were to make his existence known, then our relationship with him would have to be out of fear. If he really revealed his power and might to us, we would have to obey him out of fear. There would not be any faith involved. So God allows our relationship with him to be out of faith so that you can obey him out of desire and not out of fear. You guys understand that? Because it's out of faith, you and I have the option to just ignore him. I have the option to just say, you know what? I don't want to believe in God. I want to do my own thing. You have that option. You could do that because it's faith. If God were to reveal himself, you wouldn't have that option. Right? When Satan rebelled against God, he was rebelling against God. Right? There was no like Satan say, I don't think God exists. You know, I'm going to do this. No, he knew God existed. He knew what he was doing. Right? So the only reason why he was following God was out of fear. But when he finally chose to rebel against God, it was absolute rebellion. It was not ignorance. Okay? So do you guys kind of understand that? Why God would operate this way? Okay? Any questions about these first parts? First people? Okay, let's keep going then. Verse 5, by faith Enoch was taken away that he did not see death and was not found because God had taken him. For before he was taken, he had testimony that he pleased God. But without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. Enoch was an interesting guy. He's mentioned in the book of Genesis very briefly. He's like in one verse. And it just says that, you know, he lived about 300 and then Enoch was not. Because he pleased God. That's basically all it says about him. And the writer of Hebrews is just saying that the reason why Enoch was so pleasing to God was because Enoch trusted God. He just had this firm faith and belief in who God was, and he trusted in God's goodness and his mercy and his beauty to such an extent that God just brought him home. This is another aspect of faith that we understand it, we just need to apply it to God. Now, if I told you guys, I want you to believe in me, what do I mean by that? Do I mean I want you to believe I exist? No, right? What do I mean? This is what I say. Believe, trust me, you know, right? Like, believe in me. Have faith in me, man. I'm gonna come through, right? I'm asking you not to believe in my existence. I'm asking you to believe in my character. Do you guys understand that? When God's asking us to believe in him, he's not simply asking us to believe he exists. Of course, Enoch believed God exists. That's not what he's talking about here. What he's talking about is he believed in the character of God. Jesus, when he was on the scene, he constantly asked people to put their faith in him. And we read that and we're like, what is he talking about? Of course people believed that Jesus was a real person. You know, they were looking at him. They were touching him. He was asking people to trust him, to put their faith in his character, to believe in what he was saying. You guys understand that? So just saying, I believe in God, that doesn't save you. You have to believe in his character. You have to believe that he is who he says he is, that you believe what he's saying to us. You believe in his word. That's what it's getting at. And this kind of faith, this trusting in God, pleases him. Just like in any relationship, that type of trust is necessary for any relationship to grow. I'm sure you guys have been in a relationship before, and you guys would probably know what I mean when I say, you know, a needy girl, right? Now, what do I mean? What's a needy girl? Right, she's always bugging you, right? She always needs the affirmation, do you love me? Am I pretty? Right, she's always insecure. She always wants to know what you're doing. And why is that? Does she really trust you? No, right? If she really trusted you, why would she be asking you all the time? Does that make sense? And that's why you can't abide in that relationship. You're like, here's this super insecure girl. It doesn't matter how many times I tell her I love her and I'm not going to cheat on her. She's constantly doubting. She's constantly asking me, and eventually it gets on your nerves, right? Without faith, it's impossible to please anybody. Like I said, God doesn't want a fear-based relationship with us. He wants a loving relationship with us. And a loving relationship is dependent on trust, faith. Without trusting in the character of God, you can't please him. And if you read in the New Testament, I encourage you guys, read through what Jesus says to people. Faith is the only thing he compliments. It's the only thing he compliments. He never goes up to someone and says, hey, dude, great is your strength. Hey, man, you got a great house, dude. I just want to tell you, your house is amazing, right, dude? Hey, by the way, great job. Hey, dude, you got a beautiful wife. Man, good on you, right? He never says that. All he says is, great is your faith. Great is your faith. That's the only thing he compliments. So in our lives, if you want to please God, if you're like, dude, I want to live a life that pleases God, you got to trust him. That is the only way to please God. Nothing you do will please him. Nothing you do will please him. And let me put it this way to you guys. Imagine you have a kid, right? Imagine you have a little 5-year-old son. And he wants to please you. He wants to do something to please you. Now, as a 5-year-old, he can't really please you. And here's what I mean. Anything he does to try to help you is going to end up hurting you, right? Because he's a 5-year-old. Right? 5-year-olds are idiots. That's just a fact, right? He's right. If you're like working on something, like if I'm outside and I'm working on, you know, the lawn or something like that, or I'm trying to do some work, and a little 5-year-old comes up to help me, he's going to ruin everything. I already know that, right? He's going to pick up his little toy rake and he's going to, you know, probably make piles where he's not supposed to make piles, or he's going to, like, you know, eventually get bored and sit around a anthill or something. He's going to do something to make my life a lot more difficult. You guys understand that? Now, if I have a son who's 5 years old and he buys me a present, let's say he goes and he buys me, he's like, man, it's my dad's birthday, I want to buy him a present. Whose money did he use to buy that present? Mine. He doesn't have any money. Does that make sense? Do you guys understand? He can't please me with his actions. The only way my son could please me is just by trusting me and loving me. Does that make sense? The thing I would want most for my son is just him being like, I trust my dad. If every single time I asked my son to do something, he questioned it, I would be like, dude, this is kind of lame, you know? Why don't you trust me? I'm like, hey, dude, eat this. He's like, I think you're trying to poison me. I'm like, come on, man. Like, just eat it. You know, eventually you get old. You just want, dude, if you want to please me, just trust me, right? Just trust me. Just listen to me. Just love me. That's how you show your love to a father. That's the relationship we have with God. What are you going to give to God? What are you going to give him? He created everything. Think he wants your money? Here, God, here's my money. Oh, man, thank you. I was short a couple bucks, you know? Like, dude, thank you so much. You think he needs your actions? God, I shared my faith today. Great. I kind of fill the universe, and I'm the one who saves everybody. And I have angels that could do that, by the way. You know, I'm pretty sure an angel would share the gospel a lot better than you and I. You know, I mean, do you think he's really impressed that I'm sharing a Bible study right now? No. Right? He could do that. When Jesus was walking into Jerusalem, you know what he said? People are like, dude, tell these people to stop praising you. You know what he said to them? He said, dude, if they stop praising me, the rocks will cry out. He doesn't need me. Right? I think it would be a much more impactful Bible study if that bench started talking to you guys, right? That would, I think you guys would listen to that a lot more than me. He doesn't need me. There is nothing I could do to please God. Do you guys understand that? He wants me to trust him. That's what he wants from me. He wants my faith. He doesn't want my actions. Now, when actions come out of faith, then I'm pleased, right? Let's go back to the example again. If my son wanted to help me clean the yard, as a father, that would make me happy. But it would make me happy not if he thought he was doing everything, right? If after he helped me clean the yard, he came back in the house and he was like talking to my wife and he's like, "Hey, Mom, I just cleaned the yard. You know, my dad was there, but it was really me." You know, I'd be like, "You little crap eater. You know, you little turd. That was me, man. Like, I do this stuff." Or if he bought me a present and he's like, "Here you go, Dad. You buy me a gift, so I thought I'd throw you a bone and give you a gift." You're like, "Yeah, it's my money." You know, like, dude, I'm not supposed to be just ecstatic about that. That's my cash. You can't give me that and think that I'm going to be pleased with you. The only way that I would be happy if my son did that is if he bought me a gift. He's like, "Dad, I just love you. You know, I just want to buy this for you. I know it's not my money, but I just want to get you something." That would make me so happy and proud as a father. Right? If my son was like, "Dad, you know what? I know I'm not much help, but I want to just be with you as you do the art. You know, I just want to be with you in your work." Right? Wouldn't that make you happy as a dad? You'd be like, "Dude, that's awesome. You know, my son could be playing video games right now, but instead he wants to help me out in the yard. You know, he doesn't have to, but he wants to." That's the same thing with God. He's happy with what we do only when we do it out of faith. Because that shows a trust in him, and it shows that we love him. If we're doing it and we're saying, "God, aren't you proud of me? Look what I did." You know, he's like, "Dude, I'm not proud. That's all me. Like, I did that. You know, you can't do anything. Your very breath is from me. You couldn't even breathe if I didn't allow it. You know, everything is from me." So we're happy, we're satisfied only when we are entrusting God, when we're really believing in him. Let's go to the next part. By faith, Noah, being divinely warned of things not yet seen, moved with godly fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his household, by which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is according to faith. This is kind of similar to what I've been saying. Just because Noah believed that a flood was coming, so what? If that faith didn't move him to build an ark, that faith is useless. And this is an aside, but if you ever talk to someone from a cult group, they will love bringing up James chapter 2. That is like their favorite chapter in the whole Bible. They will read it. They've memorized it. Because in James chapter 2, it says, faith that works is dead. Right? It says, faith alone cannot justify you. And they read that and they say, "See, you need works. You need works to be saved." Right? And the thing that they don't understand is that every book of the New Testament says the exact same thing as James. He didn't say anything unique. James isn't contradicting Paul when Paul says faith alone saves us and James says faith that works is dead. Paul said the same exact thing. What James is talking about is he's not saying that faith can't save you. He's saying there's a type of faith that can't save you. Just like, once again, Noah having faith that a flood is coming, that doesn't save him. Only faith that motivates him to work can save him. Having faith that there's a God, that doesn't save you. The only type of faith that saves you is a faith that moves you to do something. Right? What do I mean by that? If I truly believe that Jesus is a real person, that he died for my sins and he rose again, if that doesn't impact the way I live, what good is that faith? If I believe that God literally came down as a person, Jesus Christ, and died for my sins, and yet I'm still committing all the sins that he told me not to commit, I would look at him and be like, "What are you thinking? Like, if he died and he rose again, and he told you that this is the way you should live, and he told you that he knows what's best for you, and you don't do it, what good is your faith?" Right? If you don't trust him, Jesus put it this way. He says, "If you love me, obey my commandments." Right? Faith will always motivate us to work if it's genuine faith. If it's not genuine faith, then you won't be motivated to work. And here's another cool thing. Faith not only will motivate you to work, but faith will motivate you to work harder than anyone else. Okay? You guys probably don't have jobs yet, right? Eventually you'll get a job. and you'll see something. You probably understand this because you probably, I don't know, maybe you've had like an uncle or maybe your dad's like, hey, you know, pick the weeds and I'll give you $5 or something like that. You know, something like that. Now, when someone gives you a job to do, you're not doing it based on faith. And this is what I mean. You're doing it to receive something. Does that make sense? Like, when I come to work, I'm not coming to work because I'm like, out of the goodness of my heart, you know, I'm coming to work. You know, I'm doing it because I need money. I need a paycheck. That's really the, I need to pay rent this month. I'm coming to work, you know. It's not out of faith. Now, if you guys have ever done a job like that, here's what you know. You never do more than what you're told. Right? If your dad's like, hey, man, I'll give you $5 to do the weeds. You're not going to do the weeds and then like plant trees and then like, you know, completely remodel the front yard and be like, yeah, I just want the $5 though. I did all this above and beyond, but I just want the $5. You know, you never do that, right? You would only do that if you thought he was going to give you maybe kick in a little extra, right? That's because that's a works-based relationship. Now, a faith-based relationship is this. I'm sure that in your guys' lives, you've had maybe a teacher or a coach or something like that that you've genuinely respected, that you've looked at and been like, man, I like this. This dude is awesome. Now, people that you respect and you genuinely trust and have faith in and have a relationship with, you will always go above and beyond for those people. Let me even put it a little bit deeper. I'm sure you guys have had a crush before. Now, if you have a crush on a girl, you will always go above and beyond for that girl. You won't do the bare minimum. Right? If you have a crush on a girl and you like her and you want to be with her, and she's like, hey, you know, can you give me a ride somewhere? You won't be like, ah, you know, no, I don't think so. You know, like, dude, you would definitely do, like, you'd be like, dude, I'll give you a ride today and any other day. You know, I'll do that. Or like, if she's like, hey, you want to go out to lunch? You won't be like, yeah, but you got to pay. You know, like, dude, you go out to lunch and you'd pay. You'd always go above and beyond. Why? Because you have faith in that person. Doesn't that make sense? You have a trust. You have a love relationship with that person. And you want to go above and beyond. If you have a love relationship with God, you will always go above and beyond for Him. If you're a works-based relationship for Him, then you'll always do the bare minimum. You're like, well, God told me to do this, so that's what I'm going to do. But if you have a faith-based relationship with Him, you'll say, dude, I want to do this, and I want to do more. Right? And a lot of Christians, this is the way they do it. They'll say, well, I'll obey God with my body, but my heart is mine. So, like, yeah, I want to have sex before marriage, but you know, I'll fool around. You know, like I'll go as far up to the line as I can. Right? Okay, well, that's great, but that all that's showing is that you don't really trust God. The only reason why you're obeying God is because you want to get something from Him. And that's not a faith-based relationship. That's not a loving relationship. That's just you want something from Him. Noah went above and beyond because he trusted God. He really trusted Him. He really believed in His character. He really believed that God was best for him. And when we get to Moses, we'll talk more about that. Verse 8, by faith Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith he dwelt in the land of promise as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he waited for the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. By faith Sarah herself also received strength to conceive seed, and she bore a child when she was past the age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one man, and him as good as dead, were born as many as the stars in the sky, and a multitude innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. And truly, if they had called to mind what country from which they had come out, they would have had opportunity to return. But now they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for He has prepared a city for them. Now, this is what it's saying. He brings up Abraham and Sarah. Abraham, you know how old Abraham was when he had Isaac? It was like 100. It was like 100 years old. He's getting up there. Sarah was about the same age. And so I like how the writer of Hebrews puts it. He's as good as dead. When he had a kid, he was done, man. He was an old, wrinkly prune, man. He had no strength in him. It could even be referring to the fact that maybe, not to get too graphic on you guys, but he may have not been able to get it up. You know, he was so old. And he had faith in God. He had such a trust in God that he's like, dude, you know what? I believe God has promised me a son. I know He's going to make it happen. Right? I believe in Him as faithful. And God made it happen. Now, with all these things, you're like, okay, so he's getting this blessing, but notice what he says. He says they weren't doing these things for the blessing, meaning Abraham didn't do it so he could get Isaac. That wasn't his goal. His goal, he says later, was heaven. He said, I'm a stranger here. This isn't even my home. So this is what I mean when I say that. Our faith that moves us to do things, don't think this faith is going to make your life good. I mean, don't think like, I'm going to wait till marriage because then my marriage is going to be amazing. Maybe, maybe not, right? There are plenty of marriages I could point out to you guys where they did not wait for marriage. They had sex before marriage. They got married and they have a great relationship. And then there are a lot of marriages I could point out for you guys where they waited to get married and they have a terrible relationship, right? That's not why we do it. You guys understand that? I don't wait for marriage so that my marriage is going to be awesome. That's not my goal. My goal is to please God, because I'm seeking another home. You guys understand that? If you have a great marriage, but you've displeased God, does it really matter? If you have an amazing, Jesus put it this way, if you gain the whole earth, but you lose your soul, what does it credit you? Right? If you have all the pleasures of the earth wrapped up inside of you, what does it really benefit you in the end? And we'll talk more about that in a second, but I think you guys kind of know what I'm getting at. So we do these things for a heavenly hope, for a greater hope, a greater desire. And once again, that moves us greater than anyone else, right? Where your goal is how hard you'll strive. And if your goal is just simply something earthly, you'll always stop striving once you get it. So for instance, if I gave you this goal, if I said, hey, you guys, I want you to, you know, let's say you have a test coming up next week. I say, I just want you guys to be able to pass the test. That's just going to motivate you guys to study enough to pass the test. Now, what happens if you cram, right? If you cram for a test and you take it, you pass it, what happens to all that information once you pass the test? Useless. You forget it. It means nothing. Do you guys understand that? It was just a means to an end. But if I say instead, I want you guys to study this information because it's going to be important for everything that you do in your life, your future job, your future everything, is until you're 100 years old, till the day you die, what you study today is going to mean something, right? Now it would change the way you study it, right? Now you're not just trying to pass a test. Now you're honestly looking at this thing like, this stuff is life. This stuff is going to mean something to me. You guys get that? Which is why school is so useless, right? Because you know that that's not the case, right? You know that when you're taking Algebra 2, you're like, I'm not going to use this. You know for a fact that it's useless. And it is. It is useless. I'm not going to try to convince you guys otherwise. It is useless. You're doing it to obtain an end. You're doing it to get out of high school. And that's great. But it's not gonna motivate. I don't remember like anything from high school. I'm only 26 years old. It's only been 8 years. You know, like if one of you asked me for help on your high school homework, I'd be like, I don't know, man. I totally dumped all the information because it's useless. It hasn't benefited me at all. But there is some information that I learned, probably in like middle school, actually, that is useful, right? It's useful for me to know how to talk, how to read and write. That's useful, right? I need to know that, right? When people were teaching me that, I wasn't like, this is useless. Why do I need to read and write? This is dumb. You know, like I learned it and I paid attention and I continue to use it all my life because it's applicable to me. Same thing is true in Christianity. If you're just using God to gain an end, then it's useless. But if you're studying and understanding God because that relationship is an eternal one, right? I mean, we need to get that through our heads, is that we are eternal beings. We're going to be alive forever. And you're going to know God forever. So that means things that you learn about God today matter. The things that you do for God today matter for eternity. The things that you do in your life matter for eternity. And by faith, we believe that. I don't understand it, but I believe it. Right? I don't understand that what I do today affects eternity, but I believe it. You guys get that? And that motivates the way I act. It changes the way I act, where I'm not just doing the bare minimum, but I'm going above and beyond. Now, let's keep going. We're going to go quickly through this part. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promise offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said, in Isaac your seed shall be called, concluding that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from which he also received him in a figurative sense. By faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come. By faith, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph in worship, leaning on the top of his staff. By faith, Joseph, when he was dying, made mention of the departure of the children of Israel and gave instructions concerning his bones. Now, this is all stuff that you guys could read in the book of Genesis. I'm not really going to go too far into it. But it's just saying, all it's saying is that these people were able to do things that made no sense because they trusted God. Right? So Abraham was told that Isaac was the son that was going to give birth to the Israelite nation. And God asked Abraham to sacrifice Isaac. So he trusted. He's like, God promised that this is the dude who's going to do it. Isaac's not married. He hasn't had any kids. Thus, therefore, God must be faithful. Do you guys understand that? He did something that was seemingly impossible because he believed in God's nature, that God's not a liar. Isaac gave promises to his children, not being able to enforce them, right? I mean, these people, Isaac and Jacob, both blessed people without the power to bless them. Right? Isaac said things to his sons, like he said to Jacob, he says, dude, you're gonna rule, you're gonna have a nation that's gonna come out of you. He had no power to do that. He didn't become a ghost and empower Jacob to become a powerful nation. He said those things to his son because he trusted God to do it. Joseph, he gave a promise to people. He says, dude, take my bones back to Israel, even when he was in Egypt, signifying that he trusted God would bring, he would save the Israelites from captivity and bring them into the land. This is all stuff done by faith. What does it mean for us? It means that a Christian could do impossible things by faith. Means that me as a Christian, I could do things that my friends could never do. Things that they would probably want to do, but can never do. I could function in such a way where I don't care what people think about me. Because I trust God. I trust that He has what's best for me. I could do insane things, crazy things, that my friends would look at and call me an idiot. But I could do them because I trust God is going to be faithful. And I do that by faith. So we do impossible things by believing in the eternal God. That's what we do. Now, this is a really cool section. I want to focus on it a little bit. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden 3 months by his parents because they saw he was a beautiful child and they were not afraid of the king's command. Once again, they were able to do an impossible thing. They were able to literally disobey the government and risk death because they trusted God. Right? Underneath that, by faith, Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. For he looked to the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. Now, this goes against what a lot of Christians understand. Do you understand that when we do things, we're doing them for a prize? That we're doing it for a goal? We're trying to get a reward? That when I go out and share my faith, I'm not doing it just because it's the right thing. I'm doing it to get a reward. You guys know that, right? You know, when I teach Bible studies, everything I do is to get a reward. But the important thing is what the reward is. The reward isn't a thing. I'm not hoping that, you know, God's going to be like, way to go, buddy, and he's going to give me $10 or something like that. That's great, but it's not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a deeper relationship with God. It's kind of like this. It's like, why do you do good works for your girlfriend? What are you expecting in return? A love and appreciation, right? A deeper relationship with him. Now, if she asked you, like, hey, why did you give me a present? Well, I'm hoping that you put out for me later. You know, then, okay, that's great. But, you know, you definitely won't appreciate that. It won't increase your relationship, and now you're just being selfish, right? And this is another thing that's wrong with it. Notice we say, yeah, sharing. Selfish sharing. This is another problem that's wrong with it. He says that these pleasures are passing. Now, we've actually discovered this. Psychologists have discovered this. They don't know why. But there is a finite amount of pleasure you could get from being selfish. This is what I mean. If I become selfish in a relationship, let's just take a relationship. Let's take a relationship with a girl. Okay? And let's say I'm like, you know what? She's hot. I want to be with her. Right? I want to be with her because she's hot. And everyone's like, why do you want to be with her? Because she's hot, right? That's it. I just want to be with her because she's hot and she looks good. And that will make my friends be jealous of me because I got a better looking girlfriend than them. And I want to do stuff with her. That's why I want to be in a relationship with her. Now, anyone who's been in a relationship understands this. No matter how pretty a girl is, she has flaws. And after time, there comes a time where you could put up with the flaws because of how good looking she is. But then there's a moment, and everyone knows it, there's a moment where you don't care how pretty she is. She's just obnoxious. And you're just like, you know what? This is it's run its course. I don't care how good looking you are. I don't care what props I'm getting from my friends. You are just an obnoxious human being. I am done with you, right? Because that's a passing pleasure. Do you guys understand that? There's only so much joy you can mine from someone like that, being selfish, right? Pornography is fun, but there's a finite amount of pleasure I could get from that. It's good, but it's not that good. You know, it's not something I'd be like, yeah, dude, that's my life. You know, porn is my life. You know, like even an atheist would look at you and be like, dude, that's stupid. You know, it's good, but it's not that good. You know, like if you give up your life for that, you've ruined your life. You know, that's not worth living for. Well, here's the question then that I could point to someone like that. What is worth living for? Well, that's what a Christian would say, God, right? But as an atheist, it's like, well, what are you going to live for? Your job? Is there a job that's really good enough that you're like, dude, this is everything. This job is everything. I love it, man. I you know, when I wake up, I just float into my work clothes and I go into the office and I love it. You know, it's amazing. You know, no, there is no job that's good. I'm going to let you guys in on a little secret. Marriage is good. It's not that good, though. Right? It's awesome. I love my wife. We have an amazing marriage, but it doesn't fulfill me. Right? There's only a certain amount of pleasure I could get from it. The Bible is saying what Moses realized, and by the way, Moses walked away from quite a bit. Dude, he was a prince of Egypt. What could that guy want that he couldn't have? He had money, he had wealth, he had fame. There was a dude who had a job that was awesome. Wouldn't you like, king of the world, right? That would be a good job, right? You could do whatever you want. Actually, even better, you're a prince. Being a prince would be way better than a king because you have all the authority of the king, but none of the responsibility. Isn't that amazing? No one's dependent on you. You can do whatever you want. You have all the money you could ever desire. You think that Moses had some really, really beautiful girls after him? Absolutely. He's the prince of Egypt, man. He's amazing. He had any girl that he could ever possibly want, anything that he could ever possibly want. And you know what he realized? It's good. It's not that good. There's a level of pleasure you could get from it, but after a while, it just is emptiness. It just goes away. And when Moses realized, he looked at slaves. Isn't that crazy? He looked at slaves and he says, they have something I don't have. These people had nothing. They were slaves. And Moses was jealous of them. Isn't that weird? He saw that God is so good that if you are in slavery with God, you have everything. But if you are the prince of the world and you don't have God, you have nothing. That's radical. So what we believe, when we say that we're doing things for a reward, we believe that Jesus is more pleasurable, more satisfying, more enjoyable than anything on this planet. And that through him, everything else actually becomes more enjoyable. Because every good and perfect gift comes from him. So when I'm enjoying my wife, I'm actually enjoying God who gave me my wife. Does that make sense? Everything I do is enjoyment of God. Even when I have intimacy with my wife, it's still just enjoying God. There's nothing that is devoid of God. It's all with God, which was very different. You know, I used to believe that sex was like totally devoid of God, that, you know, like you got married and then, you know, sex is icky. So you kind of had sex and God was like kind of disappointed with you. But, you know, you're just like, well, he's like, I guess you got to have kids, you know, so like he allows it, but he's not really too happy about it. And then I started reading in the Bible. You know what I found? I just read to page 3 and I found a naked man singing a love song to a naked woman about how much he wanted to have sex with her. And I was like, that's different. You know, that's a little bit different than the way I used to think about sex. Right? That's page 2 of the Bible. You know, just the 3rd chapter. That's what you see in the Bible. That's setting you up for something. If I was watching a movie and 2 minutes into the movie, I saw a naked dude hanging out with a naked girl, I'd be like, I think I know where this movie's going. You know, like there's it's probably just going to go that way. That's how the Bible starts. Very positive view of sex. Why? Because sex is a gift from God. Everything is a gift from God, made to be enjoyed in the confines of thanksgiving. Right? I thank God for it and I appreciate him for it. And that means I only engage in it in the way that he says is acceptable. Do you guys understand that? Everything is for the enjoyment of God. Everything. So the contention of the Christian is never, you can't have pleasure without God. It is that you can't have supreme pleasure without God. You guys get that? I would never look at my friends who are having sex with girls and be like, dude, you're not having fun. They'd be like, oh, it feels pretty fun. You know, like, dude, I don't know what you're talking about. You know, I would never look at them as they're drinking and be like, dude, that's emptiness. They'd be like, it feels pretty good. You know, I don't know about that. You know, at the end of the day, it is emptiness. If you keep abiding in that, if you live for that, it's emptiness for sure. But it is pleasurable, but it's a passing pleasure. What I would say is what I have in God is a supreme pleasure. If I live for him, he satisfies me. Is the only thing worth living for and dying for. Okay, that talks about the Passover. He just goes rapid fire. I'm not going to read it, but he goes rapid fire over a bunch of people that I don't have time to talk about. But he says, by faith, all these people did these things. And then he goes on and he talks about how they suffered. Verse 35, women received dead raised to life again. Others were tortured, not accepting deliverance that they might obtain a better resurrection. Still others had trial of mockings and scourgings, yes, and of chains and imprisonments. They were stoned, they were sawn in two, were tempted, were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins, goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and mountains and dens and caves of the earth. And all these, having obtained a good testimony through faith, did not receive a promise. God, having provided something better for us, that they should be made perfect, they should not be made perfect apart from us. Two things I want you guys to get out of that section. Number one, once again, obeying God doesn't mean your life's going to be great. It may mean that your life sucks. There are Christians all over the world today that by putting their faith in Jesus Christ, they know it means they're going to be put to death. People in the Middle East, right? They're getting their heads chopped off today for putting their faith in Christ, and they're doing it anyway. And that means that Jesus is, once again, either Jesus is so pleasurable that he's worth dying for, or else you shouldn't serve him. That comes from faith. Either you believe he is, or you don't. That's really all it comes down to. It comes down to faith. That's the first thing. Secondly, if we went through everyone that is mentioned here, we went through Abraham, we went through Abel, we went through Enoch, we went through... You guys know these people kind of sucked, right? They weren't that great. Abraham had concubines. You know what a concubine is? It's a sex slave. So was he a good guy? Not really. You know, if I knew somebody, they came to church, they're like, hey, man, I love God, but I have sex slaves. I'd be like, okay, dude, you got some major repenting to do. You know, that's not okay, right? Or if they came to church, like, hey, by the way, I had sex with my maid, you know, and I'm married. You know, I'd be like, that's got a hardcore. He mentions Abraham. He mentions Isaac. Isaac was just... His sin was mainly, he just wasn't the best father. He was guilty of favoritism in his family, like major favoritism. Then you have guys like Jacob, who had sex with four women, like four wives. He had four different wives that he had sex with. Two of them were his maids. So you're like, dude, that's pretty hardcore. Right? What's that? Yeah, no, they were all alive at the same time. Yeah, he married two sisters and he married their maids. Not the best guy, right? You got Samson is mentioned here. Samson was a tool, man. He was no joke. He was a superhero. And you know what he used his strength to do? He used his strength to play pranks on people. He stole someone's gate. Like, he just picked it up out of the ground and he moved it on top of a mountain for no reason. He tied foxes together and lit them on fire and let them run through fields and ruin people's fields. Like, he was a jerk, dude. Like, he blew it. He was supposed to deliver God's people, never did it. Right? He used all of his strength just to feed his own ego. And he's mentioned here. Like, really? You're like, dude, you got Barak, who was a dude who was such a sissy that he wouldn't go to battle unless a woman said that she would go to battle too. Dude was a complete sissy, complete coward. You got David, who once again had sex with a married woman, killed her husband. You got these people, and you're like, how are these people mentioned here? They're being mentioned. Did you guys notice this? They're being commended. They're like, dude, these guys are awesome. And you read them, you're like, they don't seem very awesome. What made them awesome? Faith. Can't be actions. I can't look at them and be like, dude, emulate Abraham. Get sex slaves. That's the way to live. I can't say that. The only thing I can tell you that is good to emulate about Abraham is his faith. The dude had faith. This is the important thing. It's so important in the Christian life to understand this. Faith is the way to please God. Faith is the most important thing to seek. And it goes so against what we believe. We're like, no, we need to seek works and this stuff and that stuff. And God's like, no, just trust me, right? That's the thing you need the most, faith. Now let's pray, and then if you guys have time, if you guys have any questions, feel free to ask. Dear God, I want to thank you so much for this lesson, that you desire us to be people of faith, Lord, not people of works. Help us to do that. Help us to not be legalistic, but to trust you, God. And help us to understand that if you could use people as messed up as these guys, you could certainly use any of us, Lord, if we simply trust you. We love you, and we love the things you've done for us. In your name, amen.